up on KSCP News, AFN announces its keynote speakers, and Trump wants to privatize the FAA's air traffic control options. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 8:30 a.m. Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams with some local news on June 8, 2017. It's been 75 years since the U.S. government removed Alaska Natives from their homes in the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands, following a deadly attack by the Japanese. Hundreds of people gathered in Unalaska recently to commemorate the bombing of Dutch Harbor during World War II and to hear stories from the survivors. KUCB's Laura Craigle has more.
The choir of Unalaska's Russian Orthodox Church sings in a crowded high school gym that didn't exist in 1942, when Japan spent 2 days dropping bombs on the island, killing more than 40 American soldiers and civilians.
Again, we pray for the repose of the souls of the departed servants of God, those who lost their lives in the bombing of Unalaska departed this life.
The choir's prayer is dedicated to those who died during the Aleutian campaign. But overall, the commemoration provides a rare chance to honor 43 of the survivors. The group has come from near and far, from Akutan and St. Paul Island to Mississippi and Massachusetts. It includes veterans who fought the Japanese and the native Anangan people who were displaced in the process.
To come here was very good for me because it has allowed me to let a lot of anger go in what happened in Thunder Bay.
Elizabeth Spencer was evacuated from St. George Island after the bombing, along with almost 900 other Anunga. They were sent to abandoned camps and canneries in Southeast. There, Gert Svarny of Unalaska says they endured hunger, sickness, and shoddy housing for years.
They were shacks, 28 of us on the floor, and we could see through the roof.
For many veterans, this was the first they'd heard of the internment. Bob Brocklehurst of Pennsylvania was a pilot during the war, and he flew fighter planes throughout the Aleutians. He didn't really learn about the evacuation, though, until he met with Anangan elders.
I had often wondered why there were no natives on any of the islands. I've now heard this evening how you were treated. Thank you for telling your stories.
Bringing veterans and evacuees together was a challenge, according to organizer Rachel Mason, especially as they reached their 80s, 90s, and above. In the end, she says the result was worth months of planning.
I've seen tears and laughter, and I've witnessed numerous examples of better communication, better mutual understanding.
That sense of understanding was also extended to visitors from Japan. Photographer Masami Sugiyama was one of three documentarians from America's former enemy. His crew attended the commemoration to record stories of the Anunga, the veterans, and their descendants. In the middle of the packed gym, Sugiyama thanked them for sharing their history so it can be passed on to the next generation.
We have a responsibility to build peace or better future for our children. Thank you very much for inviting me here.
In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
The Alaska Federation of Natives has announced its keynote speakers for the 2017 convention. Lieutenant Colonel Wayne Don of the Alaska Army National Guard and Sergeant Jody Potts, Public Safety Director for Tanana Chiefs Conference, will speak on the theme Strength in Unity. Don grew up in Nunavak Island and has served in the Army for more than 23 years. Potts is a member of the Governor's Tribal Advisory Council from the Native Village of Eagle. AFN serves as an annual business meeting for Alaska Natives, as well as a statewide cultural celebration. Organizers expect about 4,000 delegates to attend the October conference in Anchorage. President Donald Trump has announced that he wants to privatize the FAA's air control operations, in part to speed up modernization.
We're still stuck with an ancient, broken, antiquated, horrible system that doesn't work.
APRN's Liz Ruskin has more on what Trump's proposal could mean for general aviation.
Trump is endorsing a decades-old idea, spearheaded these days by House Transportation Chairman Bill Schuster. The idea is to shift air traffic control away from the FAA into a nonprofit corporation, supported by fees. Advocates say a corporation is more agile and better suited to complete the switch to modern technology. Most major airlines are on board. But among small airplane owners and the general aviation industry, skepticism abounds.
We need to do things different. There's no argument there. I'm just a little concerned that general aviation is going to be boxed out of the decision-making process.
Adam White, government liaison for the Alaska Airmen Association, says the U.S. has an excellent air traffic control system that is modernizing, but slowly. White says some of the delay may be good.
Not something that you can implement, and if it doesn't work, we can come back 6 months later and look at it. It's got to work, or people are going to die.
Many non-airline aviators worry about the user fees the self-financed corporation is expected to impose. White wonders if fees might extend to pre-flight weather briefings and other vital services.
Our concern is that if folks have to pay to be able to do that, they're not going to avail themselves as freely to those services as they do today. And that's going to result in some safety concerns.
General Aviation now pays at the pump through a fuel tax of about 20 cents per gallon. Under several Republican plans, the board controlling air traffic operations would have seats for various stakeholders, like the airlines, the pilots union, and recreational pilots. Still, people in general aviation say their voices could be drowned out. Mark Baker is the president of the Airplane Owners and Pilots Association, which has 300,000 members, 3,000 in Alaska.
We don't register any complaints about the current system.
Baker says the reports he sees show most airline delays are due to weather and problems other than traffic control. Among the satisfied general aviators is Joe Brown, who runs an Ohio-based propeller company.
When I fly, I find a modern system, a high-functioning system.
Brown testified against privatization last month at a House hearing. He paints a far different picture from the antiquated control technology the president spoke of.
I can file a flight plan from my smartphone and get my proposed route back before I get to the airport in a text. When I take off, I have GPS navigation systems on board that allow me to fly point to point all over this country.
Brown says he's happy that enhanced technology guides him on precision approaches at hundreds of airports. About 40 of them are in Alaska. Alaska Congressman Don Young said at last month's hearing, the privatization initiative seems to be trying to reform the best part of the FAA. Though he's not necessarily opposed.
As long as Alaska is taken care of and their need for general aviation and not being run by the larger airlines, I'll be somewhat interested in what we're doing.
One of the arguments for privatization is it would allow a steady funding source removed from the budget uncertainties of Congress. President Trump signed a memo and a letter outlining his privatization plans Monday at a White House ceremony. It looked like a bill signing, but the documents have no legal impact. The plan still has substantial opposition in Congress. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams, and you're listening to KSDP 830 AM.